Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our guest this week is Tony Fiorentino. Am I saying your name correctly?
That's perfect.
Okay, who is a local Chicago playwright who has a dynamite show going at the Athenaeum Theater. It's Fraternal Instincts. Welcome, Tony.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Tell us about the play.
Sure. Fraternal Instinct is the story of two brothers, Joel and Carter Travis, and one's an actor and one's a writer. And when they get into a car accident, Carter, the writer, becomes responsible for the paralysis of his brother. So in order to, so his brother, therefore, is no longer able to act.
Oh, he's in a wheelchair.
Yes. Okay. So Joel becomes paralyzed from the waist down, making it impossible for him to act on stage as he had done theretofore. So to get his forgiveness, his brother writes a play for him that features a character in a wheelchair.
Okay, tell us who are the two stars of the show, because I thought they were really excellent actors.
The two actors playing the brothers are Andrew Pond, and he plays Joel, the brother in the wheelchair, and Rawson Vint plays Carter, the playwright brother.
Okay, one of the things I liked about the show, and I do want you to tell us more about it, was that there's a suspense element to the show, because the way you paced it, and I thought your director, who is?
Brandy Austin is.
I thought he did a terrific job, because the pacing was there. There's a mystery element to this. You see the brother in the wheelchair, and the other brother's writing a script for him so he can get back on stage, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the nasty brother in the wheelchair, nothing's ever right. He questions everything. He rewrites. He throws pages. When the other brother is doting to him, and we don't understand why early.
Yeah, there's a lot of lot of the play is actually about revenge and forgiveness, and obviously a lot of the conflicts that arise in the early moments in the play, I think the audience gets the sense that what's being argued about on the surface really isn't what's really being argued, and that there's a lot of inner turmoil and unresolved conflicts that are being struggled.
But you're foreshadowing what your themes, and I think that's a very strong piece of writing.
Thank you.
You're to be complimented on that, because it grabs you too. So there is that sort of mystery element. Why is this the older brother dealing with? I mean, what's great about it is your guy in the wheelchair is not a sympathetic character.
No, hardly.
He's not even a nice guy.
No, he's not. And that's largely a struggle for the actor too, is that, I tried to write the character in a way in which he would not be sympathized with too much, but where he would still be, you could still get behind him and want to see this character work out these problems.
Yes,
in his
you
life.
Do. He's basically, he shows hints, and that's excellent acting too, and good directing. He shows hints that he really isn't a bad guy, but he's got this problem. Mm-hmm. And you're building up, and then his girlfriend comes in. Tell us how she fits in.
Sure. Joel's girlfriend, the character's name is Vicky. The two characters were engaged to be married at the time of the car accident. And a lot of her struggle is trying to reconcile with herself the fact that she's going to be endeavoring to marry a person who she will no longer have a sexual relationship with. And being in a relationship with somebody with a disability is a different kind of relationship. And it necessitates a lot of change. And she's basically trying to reconcile herself with the life changes that go with that.
What I like about it, without her being, having her halo around her head and being a saintly character, you didn't make her into one of those cardboard saintly characters. But she is patient, and she is showing her love by saying, hey, I'm with you. I want you to move. I want to move in with you to move in with me. Because he's also kind of stuck in this walk-up too, isn't he?
Yeah.
Both figuratively and psychologically.
Absolutely. Figuratively and literally. He's kind of imprisoned himself in this fourth floor walk-up apartment, which is a really strange living arrangement for a person in a wheelchair to live in that high apartment building where there's no wheelchair accessibility. But we learn as the story unfolds that it's self-willed, and that this character is kind of imprisoning himself, whether he realizes it or not. And that's pretty much the origin of a lot of the conflict between a lot of the characters in the play.
And what I like about it is a well-paced 90-minute one-act.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying now doing shows without intermissions. I feel if you can do it in 90 minutes and tell the story and keep it flowing, I feel the audience a lot of times has a better experience.
The audience is a starting line. And of course, us critics, we like it too, but I think the audiences do. If you can tell your story, you don't have to rev it up after an intermission and the arc. seems mm-hmm. to work better. I think the actors like it too, don't they?
I think they do. They don't run out of steam, and you know what? It just keeps the thing plowing right ahead. And you know, my pitfall has been sometimes having a hard time cutting my shows down. And you know, my first show, Lease on Love, it was tragically long. It was probably 2.5 hours with intermission, and that was a comedy. So you know, it got a lot of good responses, but consistently, I kept hearing, you know, this play is just way too long. And that's when I realized that if you try to hit that, you know, certain page number, you'll end up forcing yourself to cut out the things that, you know, by cutting them, they'll highlight the stronger parts of your script anyway. So
you're just saying it's writing discipline.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you know, Doubt just came through town, and that was an 80 or 85 minute one act.
Mm-hmm.
And it won a Tony, and everyone loves it. So there's an argument for that.
Yeah, and that play was so sharply done, and you walk out and you don't feel like it was a short play because the experience you had was so enriching. It's almost hard to believe that it was as short as it was.
But... Well, I think your show does that too. And what I do, we're sitting here at the Athenaeum Theater, and we'll give a commercial for it in a moment. And I like the set. Tell us who did the set design, because it looks like a studio or like a one bedroom walk up.
Really fortunate to have Courtney O'Neill to be our set designer. She's a recent graduate from the Goodman School at DePaul University's theater program, and she really tried to evoke a sense of the cramped environment of a fourth floor walk up. It kind of gives you that dingy feel, and You definitely get the sense that this is, you know, not the most pleasant place to live, but that it's also attractive in a sense that it's real and it's very naturalistic. And she brought some good color to it.
And it looks great.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Right away, folks, you know you're in for a good show. You know, when you walk in and you see a nice set. Mm-hmm. And the young lady I had with me the day we saw your show is from out of town and very smart lady, but not a real theater person. And she said, "Oh, wow, this looks pretty good." And I go, "Yeah." I said, "Well, I think we're in for a good show. That's a good sign." Because yeah. I rarely see a show where, you know, if you're going to do the details of the set design right, it's almost a good assumption that the writing is there.
Yeah, and I'm just really lucky to have a good team of people. And Courtney, and she collaborated a lot with our director, fine director, Brandy Austin. And the both of them really came together and created this world that the actors just have a great time playing in.
Okay, so where we left the story was now, I don't want to go into, we're certainly not going to give it all away, but I want to get a feeling, because folks, Fraternal Instincts is a play definitely worth seeing. So now we're starting to see that the nasty brother isn't really mad at the writing. Mm-hmm. He's really trying to control or kind of get his pound of flesh from the brother.
Yeah, what we see, and it's more or less, I think, apparent to the audience on one level from the beginning, is that this script, the play within the play that Carter is writing for his brother to revive his career, for Joel, it's more or less becomes an instrument of revenge, a way to torture his brother. And I think we get the sense that it's mostly happening on a subconscious level, whether he knows it or not, he's doing it. But as the audience, I think we all kind of collectively see that it's definitely a way to poke his brother.
Yes, and I also got that he's so afraid of going back on stage, the more he can delay it, it delays the process. It justifies him not doing anything, right? Because it isn't done, so I can't get on stage. And so he's almost trapping himself too.
Absolutely, yeah. It's self-willed.
Yeah, and then you have these interludes where he goes and sees the shrink, mm-hmm. and I thought those were well done.
Yeah, we were fortunate to find Marcy Mancotti, great, great veteran actress.
Oh, she's terrific. Yeah, I've seen her in many things.
Very mellifluous voice.
Oh, yes.
You just get seduced listening to her, but she also has such a great sense of the character. And she, you know, it's just a pleasure to watch her. And she really has a strong sense of what she wants and what is her purpose in the story.
But again, you staunchly avoided the cliches of the guy going to see, you know, to the shrink saying, "Help me." I mean, he's not an easy patient. He's fighting her. He wants to be there. He's fighting her, and she's not necessarily just rolling over for him. She's kind of slapping him back too. I mean, it's some good scenes there.
Thank you. Yeah, he's very resilient, and I think the more conflict you can have in those kind of scenes, the better. If they begin to sound a little too clinically, I guess, sedate, for lack of a better word.
Or like, you know, a Lifeline television episode.
Exactly, yeah. I just don't – you run the risk of losing your audience, and I think the more conflict in those scenes, the more interesting they have the chance of turning out to be.
So tell us now. I don't want to talk too much more about it because you got to go see it, folks. I don't want to, you know, give away. I don't think that's right. But you tied it up. Your ending and your resolution was quite realistic, and it flowed from the character. It was just a very mature piece of writing. And I didn't know your background at the time, and I said to the young lady, because I'm in the habit now, I see so many shows, I rarely do a lot of research before the shows. You know, I bet on the theater group, I bet on the playwright, and I did remember you because you did the farce that I liked.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what got me to see your play. And but I thought the writing was so mature that I thought you had written like 20 plays.
Oh, thank you.
This is what, your second, third?
This is my third full length.
Third, okay.
And hopefully one day we'll hit 20, but I know that'll be years to come.
Well, tell us about the last play, the farce that I saw.
Sure. Cold, Cold Feet was a profoundly different kind of show. Obviously, you can tell just by the title.
Yeah. It was a classic farce, and that's what I told everyone was so great about it. Here's a new writer, and he's writing a farce, which is a formula. So many people say they're writing a farce, but they don't write it. But yours was a door slamming farce with all the elements.
Yeah, it was definitely a classic bedroom farce, and I think I really tried to model it after Ray Cooney and some of the kind of light, playful sense of his, you know, with the mistaken identities and.
Yeah, I've covered a lot of Ray Cooney's, and I've finally given up. At first, you know, being this reviewer, they say, "Oh, another Ray Cooney farce." But the more I read audiences, the more I realize how people love those. And really, they're so silly and goofy, but that's art, because they're very hard to write and they're extremely hard to direct and act. Any actor will tell you they work their rear ends off in a farce.
Yeah, comedy, it's easy to underestimate the level of difficulty, you know, in writing it or acting it. You know, if you have a palate for that kind of goofy humor, you know, and I just loved it, and I loved writing it, I loved working with our actors. It's a feel-good show, and sometimes that's...
Tell us
that's
the basic plot of that, because that show, I think that established you in Chicago.
Oh, thanks. Cold, Cold Feet was basically about a soon-to-be groom who basically gets the jitters the day before the ceremony. And at the last minute, he doesn't know if he can go through with it. So in the meantime, his brother Carl, the best man, tries to talk him back into it, and you get a lot of last-minute imbroglios happening.
Yeah, and it was clever, it looked like the cast was having a great time.
Oh yeah, they got really close, and they had a blast. We all had a blast.
What was the response to that show?
Really good. Audiences had a good time. And
what kind of reviews did you get? I know I gave you a good review.
Yeah, the reviews were mixed. You know, what I find is when you do a funny, silly, you know, comedy that's not the most intellectually challenging project, you know, a lot of the reviews won't be the most resoundingly, you know.
Well, there's some of my fellow reviewers that have no sense of humor, and they admit it. And I go, you're a sourpuss, you know. But, I mean, it was fun.
Thank you. Thank
and
you.
How well did that show do?
We did great. You know, audiences had a great time. We got some great feedback. And, you know, as a writer, I think I learned what I needed to learn to how to tighten up the show, because that was our first production. So since then, I've kind of taken what we've observed from that production and learned what to cut, what to tighten. So it was a really good educational experience and very fun.
So, all right. Fraternal Instinct's your third play. Cold, Cold Feet was the second play. What was the first play? Because I don't think I saw that. I don't remember.
No, I don't think so. The first one was called Lease on Love.
Okay.
And it was a domestic comedy about a guy who, when he loses his girlfriend and she moves out of his apartment, he has to find a new roommate. And a stranger ends up moving in, and it turns out to be another woman. And so it becomes kind of like a battle of the sexes, and a lot of the, you know, a lot of just, you know, weird relations about living with someone of the opposite sex while not having that kind of relationship. So
I was talking about that to a friend of mine who was going to have a female move in with two guys. And I was saying, you know, it doesn't work for a lot of reasons. I says, the girls take over and they start asking why you're coming home late and all that, even though if it's not a relationship. Yeah. And then I says, then if you, one of you gets a relationship going, then it's two of you against one. So either way, it doesn't work. And he thought about it and he goes, you know, that's probably true. And I think he turned her down.
Yeah. A lot of it actually came from friends I had who were living in the same situation, just telling me story after story. I said, let's make a great play.
All right. Let's get into that. A little bit of your background and what made you become a playwright?
Gosh, Tom, you know, sometimes I ask myself the same thing. I don't even remember now. I started out in acting, which is the funny
thing. What is your educational background?
I got my theater degree in acting at the University of Illinois. And when I graduated, I was sure that I'd just stay in acting. And I still love acting, although I haven't, you know, done it in a few years since I've been keeping busy with the writing and the producing. I kind of miss it a little bit. Like to get back to it. But at some point, I just veered toward writing and that aspect of storytelling. And
what was it? Your stories inside of you that had to come out, or
basically, you get an idea. I never sat down one day and said I want to write a play, but you get this idea, and you know you can't sleep at night until you're like, and what if this happened and that happened? So you just start writing it, and before you know it, you know it's done, and you say, oh, well, I don't want to just put it in a shelf. Let's do this thing, you know.
Oh, great. So you had that urge. You had to come out. They were speaking to you.
Mm-hmm.
But why comedy now? Do you follow that you write what you know, or was this comedy banging you over the head? Because you've done two out of three comedies. I know Eternal Instinct, I would call it a drama, you know, powerful drama and a character study. Psychological drama, I would call it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. Would you call it that?
Absolutely, and we have. I would say, you know, a lot of people say, did you choose the genre and then choose the story or vice versa? But I'd say usually the idea for the story will present itself to me. And based on the nature of the idea and the subject matter, you know, it becomes obvious to yourself, well, this is probably going to veer more towards the comedic or the dramatic, just based on the nature of the idea.
Okay, so your first two comedies had to be based on a lot of characters that you knew, either yourself or composite of people you know.
Yeah. I mean, very autobiographical and very, very familiar subject matter.
Did you make any enemies over those two, or did everyone get
a couple? I did have to answer a few questions that I wasn't looking forward to, but always in good humor.
But now, Fraternal Instinct, what got you into that? Because this is a real major breakthrough for you.
Thanks.
I won't see improvement because, you know, comedy, you know, it's like, is an apple better than a pear or an orange, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a breakthrough in terms of maturity of writing because it's tight. There's not a wasted word in it. The characters are strong. And what the themes and what you had to say about it all made sense.
Thank you. You know, I would say I just kind of had the idea for this story one day, and because of the, you know, the subject matter of it and the very nature of the idea, I knew it would be a drama, and I didn't know if I was ready to write it because, you know, as you know, I was just starting to kind of cut my teeth on comedic writing, you know, stuff more in the vein of Neil Simon or Ray Cooney, like we mentioned, and I'd started, you know, getting comfortable in that. So when this idea presented itself, I said, well, you know, hey, it's a great idea for a play, I think, but, you know, am I up to this? And then I said, well, I guess if I'm not, you know, I'll write a terrible play and we'll see what happens. But I said, I'd rather do that than, you know, just cast it aside.
What was the turn on to this? Was it based on any incidents you knew or anyone you knew, or?
You know what? It was based on basically, I had this idea of a story about two brothers. That's where it really started. And I have three brothers myself, and I have, you know, an interesting and, you know, a different relationship with each one of them. So I wanted to write a story that's really about how two brothers can have, you know, an unresolved conflict and basically make it through in the end, and how, you know, your blood, you can see it through anything almost.
Okay. And so once you get the plot line, how did you come up with the accident?
You know what? Honestly, the disability and the accident and all that backstory, that was actually a later development. I'd probably been working on the script for a while before that idea ever came to me. And at first, it was just this story about two brothers trying to, you know, produce something together and the conflicts that arose. But
and that's a valid story, and you covered that, but you really went in a couple other levels that really make this a strong piece.
Yeah, I think when the idea occurred about having the disability and put it elevated the stakes a little, and it created opportunity for drama and for turmoil that hadn't been there in previous drafts. So I kind of I thought that would be a good direction to take it in.
Well, I'll tell you, I think this thing begs to be a screenplay too. Have you ever thought of that?
I do. Yeah. I think it could easily be adapted. It wouldn't be too hard to do that. And
The essence is there. It's just, putting it in that format.
Yeah.
How about casting? Is this your the production company? Are you a part of that?
Absolutely. I'm the artistic director. However, our director, Brandy Austin.
Of your theater company.
Oh, Diamante Productions. Thank you. Diamante Productions is the theater company we produced the show, but our director for this show, Brandy Austin, she's a very sharp girl, also MFA graduate from DePaul. She did most of the casting, and I'm really happy with what she put together. A lot of almost against type choices, and I feel the group we have, which is Ross and Vint, Andrew Carter, Christine Cummings, and Marcy Mancati, they really just gel together very well.
Well, and it was some interesting casting from the point of view of the smaller of the two brothers ends up carrying the other one up the stairs, who's a little bigger and heavier, and the young lady who's the love interest, she's a lot taller than either one.
Yeah.
So that show, and there's directors who wouldn't do that. Mm-hmm. Size makes a difference. But when he's in a wheelchair, what's the difference how tall she is? She's dynamite. I think she's a really, really strong actor.
Yeah, Christine's got great instincts.
Yeah, she does.
And yeah, it's true. I mean, once you have one person in a wheelchair, no matter how tall the person next to him is, you're going to dwarf them almost in a way. So Christine's height really didn't it didn't get in the way too much. But yeah, I really have to give Brandy credit there on the casting. She really put together a good ensemble.
Okay, now time for a little commercial for the show. Tell us where it's at and where they can get tickets and what days and what times is the show playing.
Absolutely. Fraternal Instinct is running at the Athenaeum Theater, which is located at 2936 North Southport. And for tickets, you can call the Ticketmaster line at 312-902-1500. And for any more information, you can visit the Diamante Productions website at www.diamanteproductions.com.
Okay, and you're running Fridays, Saturdays at 8 o'clock, Sundays at 3, is that right?
Yes, we go Thursday through Saturday.
Oh, Thursday, okay, good.
Thursday through Saturday at 8 o'clock and Sunday matinee at 3, and the show runs from now until May 6th.
Okay, and tell us what the future holds for you.
I think after this one up, right now I've got an idea for the next script that I promised myself I wouldn't touch it until we close this show. I think I just need a little, get the bearings a little. But it's an idea of a comedy drama that kind of I think may find a little bit of a balance between my previous works and this show here. Try to find a happy balance between the drama and the comedy, and find the best of both worlds. But at least that's what I'm hoping.
So is Diamante Productions going to do just original plays that you write, or are you guys open for other scripts?
I don't even know if Diamante is going to produce my next story. I know as a writer, that's probably my next project. But no, I would definitely like to start looking at some other scripts that we have being submitted to the company. And also, I know I wouldn't mind doing some acting again, too, so...
Well, you got to get out and audition.
Oh, I know it.
What is your acting background? What have you done here in Chicago?
Most of my roles were first few years out. I did some stuff at the Attic Playhouse, over in Highwood.
I'm going there tomorrow night to see Harvey.
Oh, no kidding! Yeah. I hear that one's a funny one. But I did a lot of shows out there. Had a great time. Kimberly Laughlin runs the theater. She does a great job.
She sure does.
And I also did some commercial voiceover work to make ends meet. And then I did Romeo and Juliet over at Chicago Shakespeare Theater. That was my first equity show. And
that's got to be fun working.
Oh yeah.
Was it Barbara Gaines?
That one was directed by Mark Lamos.
Oh, Mark Lamos. Okay.
Yeah, he was great to work with. The whole cast. I made a bunch of pals, and it was an intense experience being up on a stage like that, sharing it with
I love their work. Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't miss anything they do. Okay, so you were the actor in that, and then you just started writing, getting these ideas to write.
Yeah, we got the company going and started focusing more on the writing, and haven't looked back too much, but it's been a blast.
You've done well, and this is a breakthrough play for you. And we certainly need more good writers, because I get so tired of the same 100 plays being beaten to death in, mm-hmm. in town. You know, there's always a fresh voice. Have you been getting reviewers out? I know I came out, and you had a few people. I think, didn't Al Breslov come, I believe?
Yeah. Al Breslov, yeah, and yeah. Reader Time Out.
Yeah, the Reader Time Out.
Yeah, so we've had some of the papers come out, and still working on the Trib and the Sun Times.
Well, but you just keep going. We'll get Chris and Hetty out.
It's a busy time of
year. Yeah, it's a busy time, but I'll tell you, I very much enjoyed the show. My friend who saw the show thought this was a very veteran theater company. She thought you were a veteran writer because I did too. Like I said, I remembered you from the Cold Cold Feet, the farce. But I didn't know your background from that. And you're to be credited with that.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
What's your future now? Where are you going to be in 5 years? That's a standard question I ask everybody.
No, it's a valid one. I ask myself it every day at breakfast, unfortunately. It's hard to tell. In 5 years, I think what I'd like to have done by then is a couple more plays written and hopefully produced. I'd like to really take advantage of the momentum, you know, that I feel like I've got going, and write a few more plays, eventually, I guess, in a perfect world, get published and have an agent and not have to.
You know what's good? I didn't hear you say you want to act in your own plays.
Yeah,
would you?
I did actually with Lease on Love, and I enjoy doing it, but I find that. It's really hard to see if you're doing anything wrong, you know, and it's hard because you're so subjective, you're so attached to it.
Yeah, that's the maturity. One of the kiss of deaths, and I don't go to see him anymore. At least I wait, let someone else go first. Is when the writer is the star, he directs. Mm-hmm. You know what I call a vanity project.
Yeah,
and like, who's going to tell him if it sucks?
Yeah, you need somebody to say no.
Yeah, you're right. You need somebody to say this doesn't work. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I was lucky on Fraternal Instinct to have not only a sharp director but a sharp dramaturg, Erica Weiss. And when we first got the team together, I thought the script was in a good place. But it wasn't until we really got to talking, and people started pointing things out to me, that I realized that there were a lot of
open are you to that? Because I like to ask playwrights that too. Mm-hmm. Some of them fight for every word, others let them rewrite it, and that's no good. Either extreme is no good.
For me, it's so helpful to hear other people's observations, and it's hard to do it because your first temptation is always to resist and defend your choices. But I think if you really can employ a little bit of discipline and say, hey, what if they're right? Half the time you'll sleep on it and say, you know what, I think they are right, and you'll take their comments into consideration.
So you got a thick skin when it comes to that, right?
You have to. I think otherwise you're not writing for the people, because you're not listening to them. You're just writing for yourself.
And theater's a collaborative process.
Yeah.
I'll never forget August Wilson, who when he wrote Gem of the Ocean, I happened to have. Corner him for about 20 minutes at the reception, and it was one of the great days. And he's, I know I overwrite. I know it's 20 minutes too long, and I'll cut it before it goes to New York. But he said, the problem is, he says, I don't have people mean enough to tell me when I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. And he says, they're starting to get comfortable, because he says, I'm a tough character. Mm-hmm. But he says, I know I need that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's the great August Wilson.
Oh, yeah.
And he did cut Gem of the Ocean about 20 minutes. So I didn't mind. I love his writing, but mm-hmm. But it was, almost 2-hour first act is a tad long.
Oh, sure. You're passionate about it, so you're overwriting. And this play, it was probably 10, 15 pages longer in the beginning, but luckily people did voice, opinions with me, and very valid opinions, and it really helped me get...
You had a good collaborative team. That helped, because, the play really came together. It was a very tight piece of writing. And generally, if you read most of our reviews of brand new plays, we always say, this play had potential, it was a little underdeveloped, the backstory was too long, they could have cut some of the redundant scenes, there were too many blackouts to move a chair, those are the kind of things we say, and none of that appeared in your work. It was a very tight, well-polished show.
It kept
me for 90 minutes, and folks, I think it's important that we support young playwrights, fresh voices, so that you know they can get an audience, and so that we can enjoy. We, you know, you got to feed these monsters. You know, when they're talent, you have to feed them, and you got to give them that feedback.
Well, we're hungry for it.
Yeah, it sounds like this is you're passionate about what you do.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And again, I have never seen anybody any good at anything that didn't have passion.
Yeah, it's the lifeblood, I think. Lord knows if I were doing it for the money, I'd be in big trouble.
Well, tell us about you. I understand your family has a restaurant.
Yeah, right down the street.
Right, it's a little plug. We're almost out of time. You got to give a little plug.
I'm glad we made room for this one. Yeah. Actually, the restaurant is Fiorentino's Cucina Italiana, and it's walking distance from the Athenaeum Theater. So if you're looking to do a dinner and a show, come see Fraternal Instinct. And if you bring your ticket stubs in to the restaurant and show them to Mama Fiorentino, you get a free dessert or a complimentary appetizer, your choice.
Oh, where's the restaurant at?
A little incentive. The restaurant is on Ashland, near Ashland and Diversey. It's 2901 Ashland Avenue, well, North Ashland.
10-minute walk.
Stone's throw from
the
theater.
Well, that's cool. Yeah. So now Mama will be happy. Tell her you got a little plug-in for your
Mama Fiorentino, we got the plug-in for you. I promised I'd do it, so I'm a man.
This has
word.
Been great, and keep up the work. We are desperate for new talented writers, and I think you're on a good track. And as long as you have that ability to work with other people, I think it helps being an actor in a playwright, because you've seen it from both ends.
Mm-hmm.
And that you have the judgment to put the team together like you did in this show, and, you know, It's out there waiting for you.
Oh, yeah. I was lucky I got those people, and I was lucky to be on your show today. I really appreciate it, Tom. Thank you
for having
me.
That's part of what we try and do, and I just hope that we can get a few people out to see the show.
Me too. Well, thanks again for having me.
Well, thank you. And folks, remember, go out and see Fraternal Instincts, and remember what I always say at the end of every podcast, go see a play this week. I think we gave you one that would be a good choice. Thank you for listening.